Well, all of our readings today are, in fact, from the lectionary. That's right. And unfortunately, maybe, they include what is widely considered to be the most controversial and hotly debated story in the entire Bible. That story you heard about Abraham and his son Isaac. I thought about just skipping it, right? Oh, but I didn't have the energy. But, you know, let's tackle it. Let's tackle it. Let's unpack it, as they like to say today, right? Unpack it. Yeah. In fact, if you were to Google what is the most controversial or debated Bible passage, now you'll get a list of some pretty wild stories. But at the very top will be that story. That's the top. It's often called the testing of Abraham. Now, we heard it from Jerry. It's a short story. Yeah? And it just kind of pops up out of nowhere. It's known as the great test or the testing of Abraham. Now, before we get to that story, quick reminder, we talked about this a few weeks ago. Sometime circa 2000 BC, 4,000 years ago, a man named Abraham was called by God to travel with his wife Sarah from their homeland in what was then southern Iraq. I think it was called Ur, I believe was the name of his town. It was southern Iraq. They were called to travel to Canaan, which is now the Holy Lands. The way they would have traveled, I think it was called the Fertile Crescent, would have been 1,000 miles or more, long journey. And Abraham, at age 75, he immediately, without hesitation, it says, answered the call. He set out on that journey, and he arrived in Canaan. So, remember that he had already been put to a major test, a big test, and he had passed with an A+ with that journey. Okay, then sometime later, at about age 100, God told Abraham that he would have a son. Wife Sarah was 90. God said, "You're going to have a son." And sure enough, he did. They had a son together, their only son, and they named him Isaac. And things were pretty good. God had made a lot of great promises to Abraham, including specifically that it was through his son Isaac that his descendants would flourish. Now, listen to what God says in chapter 21. What we heard was chapter 22. Listen to what God says in chapter 21, verse 12. And don't miss the beginning of this. Quote, God says, "Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be called forth." Again, he says, listen to whatever Sarah tells you regarding Isaac. That's what God said in chapter 21. Okay, and then we come to our story today, the dreaded chapter 22. And our great test, the great test, our story. And so my first question then is, of course, first of many, where is Sarah? Where is Sarah, the mother, in chapter 22? And the answer is nowhere. Sarah is not mentioned anywhere in chapter 22. Remember, listen to what Sarah says, right? Would she have had something to say, do you think, about sacrificing her only son as a burnt offering? might have had an opinion about that. I think I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm thinking so. She might have injected some emotion into that story. Would you think so? I'm pretty sure. That was a pretty odd story, if you think about it. Now, I say odd because it is odd. There is no rationale or warning given for it. Now, it's believed that Isaac was maybe 25 years old or so, in that range, maybe a little more, when this happened. He definitely was a grown man at that point. And suddenly, God tells Abraham to take him, his son, up on a mountain in the region of Moriah, which is currently Jerusalem. That's the area of Jerusalem. Kill him and burn him as a human sacrifice. Seem a little odd? Yeah, seems a little odd. Now notice, there is absolutely no indication given here by the author, who was Moses, that there was any resistance, objection, or emotional response at all on the part of Abraham. He just proceeded to do it. Okay, now to show how bizarre that is, let's digress for a moment and remember what happened in the Garden of Gethsemane. Right there, that picture. Now the Gospels say that Jesus was in anguish over what was about to happen. In Luke chapter 22, verse 42, it says he prayed. You'll remember this. He prayed, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me." Ring a bell? Yeah. He sweated drops of blood that fell to the ground. Angels had to come to strengthen and comfort him, right? And that was Jesus. Yeah, he was fully human, but he was also fully God. He knew the whole story. He knew the whole picture. So contrast that extreme emotion of Jesus with the utter lack of emotion, it seems, of Abraham. Does it make any sense at all? And also, would God really put him or anyone to that kind of a test? Why would he need to? Why would God need to? Why would God need to test your heart? Wouldn't he already know your heart? And hadn't Abraham already proven himself, as we already said, in many ways? So, yeah, we can see why this story in Genesis 22 is one of the most agonizing and polarizing stories in the Bible. Probably number one. If someone today were to, whether with emotion, but definitely without any emotion, stab their innocent child to death and claim that God told them to do it, what would we do with that person? We'd lock them up. I would, absolutely, right? No two ways about it. No two ways about it, sure. Okay, so we know for sure, even from the story, that God never intended for Isaac to be killed. And incidentally, the Bible is very clear that God is strongly opposed to child sacrifice as an abomination, right? So the whole premise of this is kind of strange. But the question remains, Did Abraham really intend to kill his son Isaac? And I will tell you, most scholars, theologians, will say the answer is clearly yes. And this will come as no big shock to you. Your humble pastor here in Bowmansville, Pennsylvania, respectfully disagrees. I think the answer appears to be, I don't know, you know, I think the answer appears to be no. No way. No way. Now, you guys can decide for yourselves. But here's why. Here's why I think that. First of all, Abraham was not a psycho. There's no indication anywhere else. He was a little strange in some ways. It's true. But there's no indication that Abraham was a lunatic, which you would have to be, right? You would have to be to do that. No. He didn't show much emotion because he knew it would never happen. God would never allow it to happen. He already knew that. He had to have known that. And he had to have known that on the short list of things that God hates, is the shedding of innocent blood. And he had to have known that God was utterly opposed to child sacrifice. He had to know that. And Abraham would have also remembered what God had promised to him at age 99, the year before Isaac was even born. In Genesis chapter 17, remember, this is 22, chapter 22. In Genesis chapter 17, verse 21, God said this to Abraham, quote, "My covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year." Now think of that. Think of that. So Abraham knew with certainty that Isaac was the key to the future. The covenant between God and his chosen people of Israel, ultimately, which led in the fullness of time and assures a son was going to rise, to the new covenant in Jesus Christ, that covenant began with Isaac. And Abraham knew it. He knew it because God told him so. It was a promise. Okay, so what was it really all about? What was this story really all about? Well, I don't know. Or pretend to fully understand. But I think it's rich in symbolism. In important symbolism. Now, some scholars argue that the moral of the story is, in fact, to put an end to and to emphasize God's total aversion to child sacrifice, which was still in practice in many parts of the world at that time. The story kind of puts it on display, and then God stops it forever. And many scholars recognize that this story is a foreshadowing of the Gospels. Just as God in this story provides a ram, we didn't read this part, you may remember it. In this story, God provides a ram as a substitute for Isaac. Later, he provides his son, Jesus, the Lamb as a substitute for all of us. There's a correlation there. So in closing, what do we take away from this? Well, let's start with this. I don't think that God will call on you to perform an overtly sinful act. Let's start there. Probably not. So if you think God is, to be a little extreme, if you think God is calling you to kill some innocent person or to have an affair with your neighbor's wife, give me a call. Give me a call. Okay? Call me. We'll talk it through. I don't think that's what he's calling you to do. And I think that simple point has a bearing on this story, right? He wouldn't call you to do something like that. And also remember this. There are things we do, we all do, all the time, especially on a Sunday morning all around the world, that are symbolic and ceremonial and that are important, that have a lot of meaning and significance. And that's what I think was maybe going on that day. I think it was ceremonial. I think it was a lot of significance and symbolism in what they were performing that day. I don't think it was maybe all that odd. I think it was maybe something beautiful. 4,000 years ago on Mount Moriah, I think all the players in that story knew exactly what was happening. And it was something beautiful, not something odd. Now I'm going to close with something. I just actually stumbled across it last night. I don't know how I even came across it. Obviously, we have the 4th of July coming up this weekend. It was a letter written by George Washington. You know who that was? George Washington? He was our first president. He wrote a letter to a Jewish synagogue in Rhode Island in 1790. And this is how it closes, almost closes like a benediction. This is from George Washington, 1790. May the children of the stock of Abraham who dwell in this land continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants, while everyone shall sit in safety under his own vine and tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid. May the Father of all mercies scatter light and not darkness in our paths, and make us all in our several vocations useful here, and in his own due time and way, everlastingly happy. Amen.